The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
We're live on a Thursday here in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, in the NFL, where one Peyton finds his place, we'll talk about another that has lost his. When we go to the NBA ranks tonight, we're going to focus on a team blazing a trail of defensive ineptitude. And for the best of the Friday Sweet 16, is it Athos, Porthos, Malinsky, and Savransky? Any of you remember Dumas? We'll find out.
Dave, I don't even know where to go with that. First take. Let's go straight to a first take. What did you see last night that you want to share with our audience today?
Something that we had to like seeing right from the very get-go. Yesterday's show, we focused on how the Knicks have really changed their focus on defense and rebounding under Mike Woodson. You wouldn't think it would be that dramatic. Just a coaching change. It is that dramatic. If you saw how they defended Philadelphia from the opening get-go. It took 8 minutes before the 76ers could make a field goal yesterday. A Philly for the game ends up shooting 38.7%. The Knicks win the boards 47-39. With the talent level they have, if they play with that kind of focus, yeah, this can be a legitimate contender. Problem they've got, though, in the East, if you've got to win your way up to the number six spot, you don't want any part of Chicago or Miami in the first round. But when you look at the standings, they could get up to number six. That means a chance to not only get in there, win a first-round series, build a little bit of momentum. I know where you were last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Where was I?
You were right across the table.
Yes.
You know, as was Kara. Food was good.
Outstanding food.
So then you went home and you worked to come in with a first take, right?
I got two first takes today. I got a pair. But first, if we're going to come to you live from Las Vegas every day like we do, we got to talk when something happens to Jerry Tarkanian. I mean, when you talk about the most beloved man in the city of Las Vegas, Jerry Tarkanian, is that guy. The legendary.
Not Wayne Newton?
Not Wayne Newton. Not Oscar Goodman. Look, all of his kids and grandkids are running for office and winning by like 80% margins. That's how strong the Tarkanian name is in the state of Nevada. Jerry Tarkanian suffering a heart attack yesterday. Get well soon, Jerry. Please, because you're important in this town. But I have to talk about what happened at Old Dominion last night because, again, I've been in Las Vegas since 1998, and over the course of that time, you find a lot of ways that you're going to lose games that you don't think you're going to lose. But I lost one last night. Never happened this way before, Dave. And, again, it's been a good week for me, a good stretch, but this game, unbelievable. Now, let me preface this by saying I have the utmost of respect for law enforcement in this country. I really do. Especially if you go overseas, you understand how good the cops are in the United States of America. It makes a big, big difference when you don't have to bribe every police officer that you see not to get arrested. But we had a situation last night in Old Dominion where, here's the story. The Monarchs star, their senior star, Kent Bazemore, a couple years ago got a DUI. And he went to his sentencing and all that. And apparently he didn't complete one of the re-education classes on alcohol management. So there was a bench warrant issued for his arrest. Well, cops like, oh, I know where he's going to be. He's going to be right there on the court before tip-off. Let's go arrest him. So Bazemore's out there again. Senior star, postseason game, chance to get to the semifinals of a tournament, maybe his last home game ever. Could you wait maybe till after the game and then arrest him quietly? No. Let's get the headlines. Cop literally comes onto the floor after warm-ups, takes Bazemore out in handcuffs. They bring him to the station, and he gets released on his own recognizance. It was a nothing to charge, but meanwhile, he didn't play. Old Dominion lost, and that's a new way for me I totally was a game. Heck of a first take, and a little bit frustrating when that happens.
I wonder if the cop had an account with Pinnacle and, you know, said, oh, I can take this price and inside information.
And it truly was. Let's move right off to Market Watch, Dave, because obviously we had a situation in the NFL over the last 24 hours that merits some serious discussion with the bounty hunting investigation from Roger Goodell and company, resulting in some really unprecedented suspensions. When we talk about coaches and general managers and that sort of thing, this is what happened. The New Orleans Saints lost Sean Payton for the year, suspended for a year. They lose a pair of second-round draft choices. The general manager, Mickey Loomis, he suspended for the first 8 games of the season. The assistant head coach, Joe Vitt, suspended for the first 6 games of the season. And, of course, for the St. Louis Rams, they lost their defense coordinator, Greg Williams, the guy who instituted this bounty program and apparently had it in several previous stints as an NFL defense coordinator, and a guy who pretty much lied about it. as did Peyton and the rest of the Saints. But big impact here, Dave. We've seen the market move already against New Orleans in a number of different categories. How do these two teams, the Saints and the Rams, deal with the loss of management and coaches?
Here's where the confusion comes into play. How do you suspend a coach? Do you monitor his phone calls? How do you structure that? The one thing we've always laughed about forever in baseball is manager argues with the umpire, they throw him out of the game. What does he do when he's thrown out of the game? Well, he's in the clubhouse communicating back to the field anyway and watching what's happening. So what happens with Payton? Is he not allowed to speak to his players? You know, there's nothing that stops him. Yeah, he's not going to be on the sidelines on a Sunday. But what stops him from Tuesday night talking to Drew Brees on the phone saying, here's what they're going to do against you defensively. Here's how you adjust. So it's hard to understand that until we find out what does that suspension mean. General manager suspended for the first 8 games. What does a general manager do once the season starts? You build your roster, but a general manager from week to week in season doesn't actually do anything. Same thing with an assistant coach being suspended for 6 games. Does that mean he's not allowed to make a phone call to any of the other coaches? Did they isolate them somewhere? We're trying to dig into this to find out what it really means. Now, we have seen the market activity for that. Next step, though, for New Orleans, they've got a name who the head coach is going to be. A couple of candidates you'll see, Ben, about. One is Steve Spagnuolo, the head coach of St. Louis the last couple of years, who was replacing Williams as a defensive coordinator. The other guy you're likely to see, Pete Carmichael, the offensive coordinator, who was mentioned for some college jobs that were open. Both of those guys could probably do a pretty good job. But what was Peyton's impact week to week in terms of game planning? There are a lot of pretty serious questions here. They're just not that easy to answer.
Meanwhile, for St. Louis, the Rams, they're not going to replace Greg Williams, at least not right now. Jeff Fisher, the head coach, he's a former defense coordinator. On the staff, you have assistant head coach Dave McGinnis. He's a former defense coordinator. You have the secondary coach, Chuck Cecil. He has defense coordinator experience. So for St. Louis, yeah, they lose Williams. But again, first year DC, it wasn't like they'd installed all of his schemes or anything yet. I think the Rams will come through this less scathed than the New Orleans Saints. For New Orleans, even though the actual impact during the week may not be dramatic, bottom line is they're not going to have Peyton on the sidelines on Sundays, and I think that will have some type of impact. May not be a dramatic negative impact. You know, Spagnuolo got put in a real tough situation, and I do think Spagnuolo is the more likely of the two guys to get the job for the year, but he's a gentleman who went into a tough situation in St. Louis. This team didn't respond well to the injuries and attrition. He didn't respond well to trying to coach a last place team that was riddled with injuries for year after year. But I think he's certainly someone with potential to be a good head coach, perhaps, in a different situation. He may find that here.
I think what we're going to find out over time is how much of a coach Drew Brees can be on the field. Again, the defense will be fine. Spagnuolo will take over. This is a head coach at least going to be the defensive coordinator. But you know, how much coaching do Brees and the offense need? If Carmichael is still there, those pieces can still be right in place. Are we going to find out over time that Brees was the guy all along, a Hall of Fame quarterback, who made Peyton look like a good coach? Or did Peyton really have that much impact? So we're going to talk about this probably more next week as we find out more of what the ramifications are. That is there a restriction on communicating? Because if there's not, what stops Peyton from watching a game on TV on a Sunday and to someone's cell phone saying, you know what, we should go for it on this fourth and one? So we're going to be real interested how the NFL tries to monitor that. But they certainly did take this seriously.
All right, Dave, real quick, we need to talk about the Tim Tebow to the Jets.
We need to?
Sure, Tebow's getting the headlines. People are interested in Tebow. And for whatever reason, Tebow is going to affect things like odds to win divisions and season win totals and all of that. But it looks like the Jets have finally worked out the deal with Denver. They're going to get Tebow. Why didn't Jacksonville trump him? That to me is the thing that stands out the most. And secondly, why do the Jets want to bring in more competition for Mark Sanchez, a quarterback who they just signed an extension for, and a guy who's been under an inordinate amount of criticism in recent years? It's a move that is a bit of a head-scratcher for me, Dave.
I kind of like the move. You know why it's not a head-scratcher for me? Jacksonville didn't want him because they know that he's not good enough to be an everyday starting NFL quarterback. But you know who could probably use him about as well as anyone? How about Rex Ryan? He's not going to be competition for Mark Sanchez. He's going to do what Denver should have done. Keep him. Let him run those third and short packages all over the field. Let him run the goal line packages. Because the one thing Ryan understands as a defensive guy his whole life is how difficult it is to prepare for different schemes. Remember, the Jets had to go to Denver last year for a Thursday night game when they didn't have a lot of prep. He knew how confusing that was for his defense. The very fact that he can put Tebow out there for maybe 7 or 8 plays a game, but force every opponent to have to game plan for that in practice, I think a nice move by Ryan. I think over time we're going to find he's not competing with Sanchez. He's brought in for a specific function. And keep in mind, if you're the Jets, you're playing at home in November and December. Road games sometimes at Buffalo and at New England in November and December. The ability to play a little smash mouth in the cold weather, that's not a bad move.
We've been getting great emails from you guys all week. And please, keep those emails coming in. We answer as many as we can on air. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter. In fact, do it. You've been thinking about signing up for Twitter. Today's the day. Go do it. Follow us at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, you can get involved in the community with active threads and discussions going with guys just like yourself, guys that love sports and love sports betting, and I'm sure some gals too. Not many, but some. Just go to covers.com/posting.
Rose Garden in Portland hosted first-round NCAA tournament games last week. We think tonight there's going to be a team on that same court that still looks like a college team. That's coming up next in Money Time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You're watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guest.
You guys ready? Are you really ready? Because it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Milwaukee, where the suddenly red-hot Bucks laying 3.5 points to the Boston Celtics. And, you know, showdown game, in a sense. Right now, only 3 games separate these teams in the standings. Milwaukee, in their current 6-game winning streak, has moved within 1 game of that 8th spot in the East, 1 game behind the Knicks. But Boston, Atlanta, Indiana, there's a lot of teams, there's a lot of room for movement still in this Eastern Conference playoff picture, and the Bucks have played their way back in to the mix. Now, how much of the 6-game winning streak was a scheduled draw? Certainly some of it. All 6 wins came against teams with losing record. But 4 of those wins came on the road, and the last 2 have come in monster blowout fashion, winning by double-digit margins on the highway, just taking opposing teams completely out of their game plan. This is a team playing with tremendous enthusiasm, good team chemistry under Scott Skiles at this point, and it really looks like they genuinely want a playoff spot. And there's one thing that really deserves some mention here, Dave. This squad is willing to work as a team, not as individuals.
When you go on a streak, you either have good players or you play good basketball. It's a combination a little bit of the two. Think about how unique this lineup is right now. You've got three different players that were player of the week over the last 2 weeks. And we told you there was that 1 week where you had Monte Ellis in the West, Ersan Ilyasova in the East. They're both on the same team now. Drew Gooden, of all people, was NBA player of the week for the Eastern Conference last week because they're all sharing the basketball. When you look at those recent Milwaukee wins, you know what stands out the most? Let's look at these assist count that the Bucks have had in those games. Talk about sharing the basketball. Last four games, 35, 33, 38, which is the high in the NBA all year, and 32 assists. Tonight they're going for five in a row. When was the last time an NBA team had five straight games of 30 or more assists? You got to go back 17 years. That's how unique what's happening in Milwaukee has been. Now here comes the conundrum for tonight's game, though. As Teddy said, it's been against some pretty weak competition. Yeah, you build confidence, you build chemistry, but tonight's matchup, a lot of things change.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, the defense is going to get tougher against a team like Boston, and the pace is going to slow. We look at the total for this game sitting at a $199.5, right in that range, and that is the single highest total for any Boston Celtics game this year. The Celtics not likely to allow Milwaukee to get many transition buckets, which means the Bucks are going to have to execute extremely well in the half court. They're going to continue averaging 113-plus per game like they have during this streak. And, of course, you know, Celtics number 3 in the NBA in defense, number 21 in pace. So very different type of opponent than the one the Bucks have been beating of late. The Celtics also 2 days off to prepare here. You know, they're not in a bad rest situation, although if things go bad early for Doc Rivers and company here, they have a showdown in the basically the Atlantic Division lead against Philadelphia tomorrow, so we could see Rivers pull the plug on Boston if they trail by margin at some point in the ballgame. But seventh road game in the last 12 days, a grueling two-week road trip for the Boston Celtics, and they've played at least one game in every time zone during this two-week stretch.
Got to the Rose Garden in Portland. The Road Grizzlies, a one-point favorite over the Trail Blazers. Talk about Caleb Canales taking over as Portland coach. The guy was just their film coordinator a couple of years ago. Got promoted quickly. His first act said, look, we need to run more. We need to create easier shots on offense. We're going to push the pace. There's a bit of a problem, though. Marcus Camby, Gerald Wallace, two best defensive players, they're gone now. We turned the play of the day against Portland the other night with Milwaukee, and if you watched it, the Portland defense looked like traffic cones, just sort of sitting out there. They're not going to move. You just run right around them, get to the basket, and you lay it in. Milwaukee in that game had 48 made baskets. 35 of them came after assists. So now the question is Memphis ready to maybe exploit them the same way? You would have liked to have thought when Zach Randolph came back, you'd get a little bit of a surge out of the Grizzlies. Well, Randolph's back, and what happened? 1-2 straight up. 0-3 against the spread. Was it Randolph's fault? No, his numbers are actually terrific. The first three games back, he only played 77-47, a little bit less than 26 minutes per game, but 51 points and 25 rebounds. That is terrific production for that amount of time. What it does disrupt is the chemistry, and chemistry matters the way that they play defense. But look for a sense of urgency from Memphis here. They're now, off these last couple of losses, tied for that number 4 spot. And the last home court in the Western Conference, they'll have an urgency here. The question is, can Portland match that?
No. You know, I don't know that we're going to see an urgency, per se, from the Portland Trailblazers again this season. When you look at what happened before the trade deadline, the defense had fallen apart. The defense was not playing well. Then they get rid of Camby. Then they get rid of Wallace. And again, salary dump moves, clearing out space, clear sign from management that they're throwing the towel in on the season. And, you know, you just can't flip a switch and say, okay, defensive intensity, guys, bring it up. Because the heart of the team's gone now on the defensive side of the floor. And you look at the numbers, boy, I mean, this graphic's going to show very clearly where the Blazers' defense is right now. Last eight ball games, again, a team that's 2-6 straight up, 2-6 against the spread during this span. They're allowing just shy of 105 points per game. And the key here, 50% shooting allowed. It's awful in the NBA to allow 50% shooting over an eight-game span. Doesn't happen all the time, and it says a clear lack of commitment to defense from Portland. Now, what other issues do the Blazers face? Well, let's see. Their bench got outscored 45-9 on Tuesday. You know, Memphis, a team that leads the NBA in steals, leads the NBA in turnovers forced, and has the bench depth to wear down the Blazers again this evening. You know, minus one, yeah, I'm interested in this. I think we're both interested in this. In fact,
let's do it again.
The Grizzlies at minus one. That'll be the Vegas Sports Day play of the day for Thursday. Yeah, we're going to continue to fade Portland until the markets catch up. Memphis minus one, that's the play of the day for tonight.
When we come back, Kendall Marshall, will he or won't he? NCAA Sweet 16 action in Atlanta. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Yeah, it's Sweet 16 time for a Friday. And got to break down Friday's games before the tip-off, obviously, today. So you can get whatever type of parlay action or future action you're looking for. So let's go to the South Regional in Atlanta. We'll look at the two games for Friday. We have Baylor minus 6 against Xavier. Total there, $1.42. Kentucky minus 9 against Indiana. Total there, $1.44. Who's starting, Dave? Me or you?
You've already started, we better do it with a little more dignity. Guy's not even wearing long pants.
You know, it's warm enough to wear shorts. Finally, you know, it's been a long winter. No big deal. I could stand up. Nah, they don't want to see my shorts.
They don't want to see your shorts. And the combination of that shirt and shorts and saying Sweet 16 that way.
Sweet 16.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get out of this and get back to basketball. Handicapping changes now in the Sweet 16. For most of these teams, the first round of the NCAA tournament, pretty easy games that you can walk through. Second round, not much build up in terms of pressure because you're staying at the same venue. Not that much attention from the national media, but now it changes. Sweet 16 means all week long, a lot of media attention. Pressure builds. So when we start with Xavier and Baylor, let's talk about what that pressure means a little bit. Xavier program, the fourth time in the last 5 years they've made it to this round. A couple of the starters, Kenny Freese, Tu Holloway. This will be the third time in their careers that they've played in the round of the Sweet 16. We're pretty comfortable that Xavier will give you your money's worth. Nothing all that unusual for them. For Baylor, boy, it's a different story. It's the first go-round for the coach, the first go-round for the players. And when you got a freshman and a couple of sophomores starting, for a team that's not all that mature anyway, I wonder if this might be a key factor coming in, that Xavier will come out loose, they'll come out confident. Baylor in this setting, this team could come out very tight.
And Xavier's a team, they kind of peaked back in December and then played very mediocre basketball down the stretch, 13-12 straight up in their last 25 games prior to the start of the big dance. But we saw how good this team was in early season play. And we know how the brawl against Cincinnati, a Sweet 16 team, a team that Xavier just blew off the floor. You know, that's how that fight got started. And it obviously affected the Musketeers' season, affected their rhythm. But again, you know, winning at Vanderbilt, you know, Vandy, a bucket away from the Sweet 16. Purdue, a first-round winner in the NCAA tournament. Xavier took care of business against that squad as well. So perhaps we're getting a team here whose value has been lessened And yet, they're starting to peak and play their best basketball at the right time right now. For Baylor, the talent's there. I mean, you look at Baylor up and down the floor, they've got more talent than Xavier does, and that's certainly reflected in this number. But when you watch Baylor play, you see it again and again. The mistakes during crunch time, the bad ball handling, the turnover issues. Yeah, they were able to survive and advance each of the first two rounds. And when you look at the final score of their game against Colorado, you say, oh, Baylor played great. They took care of business. No, they didn't. You know, they were trailing in the second half of that ball game against a very flawed Colorado team that just barely hung on for a win against UNLV, a Colorado team that was outclassed in that matchup, and yet they're the Buffs leading in the second half. But what happened? Well, Brady Haislip got hot. I mean, real hot. You know, kept him in the game in the first half with four consecutive three-pointers. Finished the game with nine made three-pointers, 9 for 12 from downtown, and that can go a long way towards winning a game. It goes a long way towards covering a point spread. It goes a long way towards making a final score look good, perhaps better than it actually was. I wouldn't count on Haislip to have that type of performance against that veteran Xavier backcourt that, boy, they can step it up defensively.
May not have been a better game in college basketball all season than Indiana's buzzer beater 73-72 over Kentucky and Bloomington back in December. Well, now it's round two. So usually the first thing we do when we want to break down a game is look at what happened the first time around and see if there's something significant we can take going forward. So what did we do with that first Indiana win? Absolutely nothing. We don't think the game carries any meaning whatsoever going forward. It was the first pure road game, not only of the Kentucky season, but of the career for so many of the key Kentucky players. Anthony Davis, get our vote for player of the year, was in foul trouble, had four fouls, only played 24 minutes that day. Even despite the fact that he was out a lot of the game, Indiana only makes 37% of their two-point attempts, but they knocked down 9 out of 15 triples. So not a whole lot to see there, except for that little spark that it brings for Kentucky, because Kentucky didn't suffer a whole lot of losses this year. They'll come back with a pretty high degree of focus. But now we talk about nerves again. Got a bunch of freshmen for Kentucky. The type of super, super talent that tends to be a little bit impervious to that, but it's got to be in play a little bit. Not only the nerves for Kentucky, but for once, it may be the only venue in this round of the Sweet 16, the court itself, and not the arena, but the stadium, could also be a pretty big handicapping factor.
Oh, it certainly can. I mean, you look at the historical numbers at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta in these NCAA tournament games. There's been several of them, let's say, over the course of the last decade or so. Played here in 2004, 2006, 2007. Look at the numbers. 31% shooting from downtown overall in all of those games combined. That's not a good shooting venue. When you have a sample size that big and a shooting percentage that low at a time of year where, you know, we just talked about what happened with Baylor draining threes. And we'll talk about, you know, Ohio U draining threes. You know, the good shooters can get hot at this time of year. You know, to see that type of a number, 31% over that big a sample size, tells us very clearly this is not a shooter-friendly venue. And this Kentucky team's grown up. I mean, they have really grown up since that initial loss to Indiana. They led the nation in block shots. They led the nation in two-point field goal percentage defense. And even if you take away the 166 blocks from Anthony Davis, the guy who Dave called the best player he's seen in college basketball this year, even if you take away 166 blocks from one guy, guess what? The rest of the team would still be the top 60 in the nation in blocks. So it's not just Davis. Now, Kentucky made shots last week against a smaller defense. Indy, with Zeller in the paint, 28 turnovers forced in the first two wins versus only 15 assists allowed. Points might be at a premium in this one, huh, Dave?
Well, the markets have certainly reacted that way. Total was as high as 147 yesterday, down to 144 pretty quickly. Looks like maybe another one of those cases where there might have been a little market manipulation. Just sneak the total up as high as you can get it. When it gets to that peak, make it come crashing down. So now here comes the question. Who can execute an offense in this environment? I told you, Indiana had to make 9 of 15 triples to win the first game by a point. If you're not able to knock down the threes in this venue, there's just nowhere to go inside against Kentucky. So many of those shots that aren't blocked are also just forced off the backboard so badly. Can Indiana find an inside game at all? Maybe the single most important factor, though, if you've got Davis and Zeller going against each other inside, whistles were a factor the first time around. Are there going to be quick whistles that could take either of them out to have that sort of impact? Can Indiana get fouls on Davis again? Because it's not really their way to be taking the ball towards the basket. They got away with something in Bloomington because that was a freshman in his first ever road game. Might not be able to get away with that. We think this time around, Indiana probably has a much more difficult time getting points.
When we come back, it's time to head to Friday's regional in St. Louis as Money Time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
All right, let's go to the Midwest Regional in St. Louis and pop these lines up for you. We have North Carolina minus 10.5 against the Ohio Bobcats. Total there, $1.43. Kansas, this line's been moving up over the course of the last 24 hours or so. Bet up from 8 to 8.5 now over NC State. Total there, $1.43. And certainly when we look at the first meeting, the first matchup in St. Louis, Dave, we're probably going to have to talk about this game tomorrow. We like to talk about this game, but we're going to have to talk about it because we still have no real idea as to whether Kendall Marshall is going to play, and we can expect a fairly dramatic line move one way or the other. Marshall announced he's in. You know where the money's going to come. It's going to come on the Tar Heels. Marshall gets announced as out. You know where the money's going to come. It's going to come against the Tar Heels. So we can anticipate where the line move's going to move, what direction it's going to move based on the information. But the information itself, nobody knows. I don't think Roy Williams knows. Now, they are preparing to play without Marshall. And here's his status exactly. You know, he had surgery on Monday. He wore a cast for 2 days. He had the cast removed yesterday. And now he's got his arm in a splint. So, obviously, not practicing with the team. So, what are their options if Kendall Marshall doesn't play? Well, we have the Frosh, Stillman White, a guy who they weren't expected to get much out of this year, a guy who's going on a Mormon mission starting next year, so not someone who projects heavily into their plans short term. And we have the senior from Alabama, Justin Watts, who's been playing point guard in practice. But again, when you have a senior on the roster who isn't getting playing time throughout the course of the season, you don't know that the Sweet 16 round's the best opportunity to get him into the flow of that Tar Heels offense.
And one of the big factors here is it's not just offense and the way that Marshall runs the show, it's defense. If you've seen Ohio play the first two rounds of this tournament, DJ Cooper, he's been terrific. Only 5'11", about 165, 40 points and 12 assists in those first two tournament wins. They've got to find someone who's capable of staying in front of him, not sure that either of those North Carolina defensive options work. So some issues all the way around for them. But we do have to address Ohio's win over South Florida. If we had more time this week, it was the classic post-mortem type of game. If you didn't watch that one, a couple of huge swing plays in the second half. Twice, South Florida got called for technicals. And they're those little type of iffy technicals. One was a player who held on the rim a little bit too long after a dunk. The other was when a player inadvertently grabbed another player's jersey. So reaching the swipe at the ball, got some jersey and said it wasn't the intentional grabbing of the jersey, but the officials ruled that any grabbing of the jersey is a technical. So what does Ohio do? Not only do they make both free throws after each tee, they also drained a three-pointer. Those two kind of fluky technicals became a pair of five-point plays that turned a game around where it looked like they were actually getting outplayed a little bit around the basket. And that's their problem here. They get killed on the board. They got out-rebounded in each of their first two games, managed to make enough plays to win them anyway. They just get hammered on the boards here. Can Cooper make enough plays to overcome that inferiority up front? But the Carolina front line is the best in all of college basketball. When you talk to some people, they're saying that all three of those starters could be lottery picks in the NBA. So it's a kill inside, but a big edge potentially at point guard for Ohio on the perimeter. We'll probably come back to this one tomorrow with some more Marshall updates.
Yeah, and just the one thing that needs to be also mentioned about that Ohio win over South Florida, there were the 2 5-point possessions that completely turned the game around, you know, if you were watching. But the 3-point shooting as a whole in that ballgame, Ohio 9 for 18 from beyond the arc, the kid Walter Offit going 4 for 4, and he hit a couple of those late in the shot clock with guys in his face, big shots. And USF just 2 of 15, and one of those two came in the final seconds in one of those scramble situations. Only one meaningful 3-pointer throughout the course of the ballgame. But Ohio U out-rebounded in both of those wins and against a taller North Carolina team. The betting markets, as this line has sat at 10.5 all week, telling us very clearly that even if Marshall doesn't play, Ohio U's got a big, big matchup problem with North Carolina's big men.
So Carolina probably moves through even without Marshall. Who are they going to play on Sunday? Let's break down the next one. NC State, an interesting matchup team for a lot of opponents. Every starter at least 6'5". All five starters average in double figures. You think, wow, there's good size. There's nice chemistry there. But there might be a bit of an issue in this particular matchup for them. These are all wings. They don't have a natural point guard. They don't have a natural center. That explains why North Carolina State didn't have as good of a season as you might think from that size and those numbers. Because when you get down to crunch time, it's point guard play, its ability to score in the pivot or block shots in the pivot that often matters. That's why North Carolina State consistently failed at the end of close games this year. And even the Georgetown game that they won on Sunday, they had a big lead that was getting whittled down at the end. They were not successful in the end game. Well, when we talk about not having a good one, not having a dominant post player, if those are your weaknesses, you don't want to play Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, your favorite player or the guy you like the best this year in college basketball was Anthony Davis. For me, it was Mr. Robinson for Kansas, who was an absolute monster all season long, athletic enough to run, strong enough to dominate the low post, great rebounder, great scorer, great leader on that team. And Thomas Robinson here is going to be a very, very difficult matchup for NC State. And I like the momentum here for Kansas. This is a team that's had more than their fair share of early flameouts in the NCAA tournament under Roy Williams and under Bill Self. And what we saw last Sunday night, a game where Purdue was phenomenal. Purdue played as well as they played at any point this season. And Kansas trailed throughout that contest. And yet, game winding down, who makes the plays? Jayhawks found a way to win it, a real confidence-inspiring victory. How'd they do it? Defense. You know, I mean, they created turnovers, forced a Purdue team that was dead last in the guard, that had the fewest turnovers in the country this year, into mistakes when it mattered most. That was a confidence-inspiring win for Kansas. I think they're going to carry some of that momentum forward, Dave, and I look for the Jayhawks to survive in advance. This is going to be Kansas-North Carolina for Sunday. I don't see an upset in either of these two ballgames.
Now, we saw good and bad from Kansas in that last win. What we thought the good was, Taylor and Robinson shoot 6 for 23. That is terrific when that happens and you win. We really do like that because now the other guys get more confident. They're going to be more willing to step up when they have to. Might not need to against NC State, would need to against North Carolina. Here's where we have a little bit of a disagreement, though, on the Kansas endgame, and this would have been a good postmortem piece. Matt Painter, we think he blew that one on Sunday. Now, Purdue twice had the ball in the final minute and a half in a one-possession game. And as we've said, if the show had been on here for 25 years, we'd have been saying this for 25 years. In a one-possession game, there's no clock. You don't even look at it. In a one-possession game, you got to score. What did Painter do on those two key possessions? He had his team run the shot clock all the way down and then try to get something late, backfired badly on them. So, yeah, a little bit of good play by Kansas. We think that might have been more a case, though, of Purdue losing one out there. But anyway, it's going to be a good matchup when we get to Sunday. North Carolina State, they can do some things to hang around. But at crunch time, no, they don't match up against Robinson or Taylor. But while you're watching that one, You've got somewhere else to go to put a little money in your pocket.
Yeah, play of the daytime for Friday's big dance action. And we're going to look for the Xavier Musketeers to hang with the number. Xavier plus six against Baylor. We talked about this ballgame just a few moments ago. Don't like that Baylor endgame. 6 points here is a nice cushion for a veteran team playing their fourth time in the Sweet 16 in the last 5 years.
Money line?
Yeah, you want a taste of the money line. But 6 points is the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. You've got one for the NBA tonight. You've got one for the college ranks tomorrow. And, hey, how much more can we give you guys? That's it. That's going to wrap up the Thursday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. Thanks for not mocking my shirt on air. And
how do you know they didn't?
They probably, because of the chat room, you know.
No, there's emails. There's all sorts of stuff that comes through.
Yeah. It'll be coming. Kara says it's cool. I'm allowed to wear it. Don't know if Kara's right on this one. Bottom line, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again tomorrow.